Welcome to the Vic Jaswal Report, the report that asks insightful questions and gets revealing answers. Here's a reality check for you. 400,000 American girls between the ages of 15 to 19 give birth each year, which is the highest rate in the developed world. 41% of high school seniors engage in alcohol consumption. One child in every five is obese. And 14 million single parents are responsible for 28 million children in the U.S. of A. Based on these statistics, do you think we are providing our youth with the right tools for tomorrow's world? Are they going to be as competent as their global peers? And will they be able to build on the legacy that we as parents leave them with? Our guest today is Dr. Gregory Jantz, who is a mental health expert and founder of The Center, A Place for Hope. He's also an internationally recognized best-selling author of 26 books. One of his books is called When Your Teenager Becomes the Stranger in Your House, and especially relevant to today's topic. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Oh, good to be with you today. Important topic.
I want to start with our culture because I think our kids are growing up too fast. I look at my own son. He's exposed to TV, movies, music, and the internet, which portrays alcohol, drugs, and sex very frequently. He understands sexual innuendos, but my boy is only 12 years old. There seems to be a loss of innocence in our children. Are we bringing up our kids in the right environment?
Well, that's a great question. The right environment. I would say that I have concerns about our environment. The average age to exposure, you mentioned your son at 12, to pornography on the internet, the average age is age 11 right now.
Age 11.
So, and what we're seeing right now, two-thirds of sixth grade girls are already reporting being on some form of restrictive diet. So if you look at this, Vip, we've got a situation where we've got kids growing up earlier. We bring technology into the picture and how that changes everything. We have some concerns about the environment that our kids are growing up in.
So what do we do to manage this?
Well, I think it starts in the home. And for me, I have a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old, two boys. And when I say it starts in the home, we've got to have an understanding, if we take technology, what are the boundaries for technology in our home? In other words, in our home, phones and smartphones have to be on the charger in the public area of the kitchen by 8 o'clock each night. You don't text on the way to school. In fact, you don't text at school at all. You don't even take your device because we want you to talk to the kids you normally text to. Okay? But, you know, it's figuring out what is your family's boundaries and parameters around technology use.
Well, you know, yes, I get that, but you can censor the home, but you can't censor their friends.
Oh, absolutely not. You know, that's why we talk about it. There's always that unknown. We want to be the greater influence with our kids. And, you know, the three things they need from us, they need love, acceptance, and forgiveness. Now, acceptance does not imply that I agree with everything they're doing, of course. But when a kid feels acceptance, remember, the teenager is going to be hyper sensitive to anything that feels like judgment. They're developing their sense of self, and so they feel judgment from a parent. Sometimes inadvertently, we can push them over to the side of rebellion.
Right. Well, let's move on to another interesting personality trait I find is their attitude.
Yes.
Most kids have the attitude of a sense of entitlement. I want it. Give it to me. We might be guilty of the notion that the more you give your child, the better the parent you are. Do we overindulge our kids in order to be liked by them?
Well, I need to start with a true confession. I believe I did that for a while, initially with my firstborn, and I regret that. And let me define entitlement. Entitlement in the culture that we live in means that I deserve it, it's mine, I don't need to work for it, and I live in a one-click society. I can click here and get it. Don't you understand? I need it. So that's the mentality. And unfortunately, that mentality develops what I call low impulse control. And low impulse control means I've lost that internal governor that keeps me from making good decisions. And by that, you know, I can be impulsive about what I send out on a text. I can send out inappropriate pictures. I haven't really developed yet that abstract thinking that says what I do now can affect my future.
So how do we help them with that sort of thinking?
Well, I think, again, we're back to talking about it. We're back to even talking about and using some illustrations. You know, one of the things that I did recently with the Connecticut shootings is around the dinner table, I simply asked the question. I said, have you guys heard what's been happening in the news? My 10-year-old boy said, yeah, I heard there was a shooting, and I think, Dad, some kids were killed, but I don't really get it or understand what happened. And so we always start from a base of information that our kids have and build from that. Too often we overwhelm them. That's a safe way of bringing up some topics. Ask them what they know about things and go from there. Again, they're hypersensitive, and they tune us out if they feel we're preaching to them.
Where is this sensitivity coming from?
The sensitivity with the kids?
Yes.
Well, you know, there's a natural developmental stage that we go through, 10, 11, 12, 13, where we're really forging that sense of identity that's separate from our family or separate from our parents, separate from our caregivers. And it's a natural process. And during that process, we do have a sensitivity. And, you know, we're trying to figure out, you know, this is the kid that suddenly their hygiene matters, their hair matters, their clothes matter. And they're really looking for, am I okay? And the feedback they get from their peers and environment is what tells them if they're okay or not.
Well, you know, as parents, and I speak to a lot of friends of mine who have kids, we've tried to develop an attitude in our generation that tries to be a friend to our children. I personally disagree with that. I tell my son he can have 1,000 friends, but he will always have only one father, and that's going to be me. Am I doing something
yes.
wrong?
And Vip, I got to tell you, I think that's wise you're approaching it that way. Let me give you a quick observation of what we've seen. We take a mother with a female teenage daughter, and the mom spends enormous amount of time trying to fit in with the daughter, trying to fit in with the daughter's peer group, trying to be like the daughter, trying to dress like the daughter. You got mom and daughter. And what happens is the mom loses respect and a position of authority when she attempts to align herself on the same level as her daughter. And then where do we go from there? So we need to understand we are the parent. I can be friendly to you as a parent, friendly and firm. But you know what? Friendships are different and distinctly different relationships than a parental relationship.
So as a parent, what should one be doing?
Finding common connecting points with your kid. Let me give a real-life example for me. We've got the 13-year-old, and you know, they develop this interest in something they're calling music, right?
Yes, I totally get
and
that.
You know what? Just taking time, and I said, hey, I want to just spend some time with you. Would you show me, because I noticed he's got this iPod and music playing, and I'm involved in all that. I said, can we go through and just and share with me some of the music? And I got to tell you, we spent a couple hours, him just sharing with me music. Out of that, I found two songs that we talked about, and he decided, you know what, Dad, it's those weren't good lyrics, and I'm deleting those. But I showed interest, which gave me the right to take it to another step.
Can't that backfire? Because if you try and take an interest and try and learn from them, they might think you end up being more stupid than them.
Again, we're finding common connecting points. And one of the things that we need to be aware of as parents is we need to stay out on the leading edge with some of the technology because our kids, you know, they know things and the quicker things, there's always the next app that comes along. That's why we as parents truly need to have passwords to their devices. We talk about I have it set up so that if anything is downloaded on any device that either my boys have, it also shows up on my smart device. And we talk about those things. So we're building trust with the technology. But remember, we live in an age of low impulse control. I can click in 30 seconds. I have this app. And oh, Dad, it was free. Okay.
Oh, I've been a victim of that many times.
Got to involve ourselves in this. I think if we don't, we'll have regret.
How do we instill a sense of gratitude into our kids? We care for their feelings, but I don't get a sense that they care for ours.
Gratitude is such an important character trait to develop. With gratitude, you develop something that's also called empathy. And so we want to teach our kids to be able to have empathy And one of the ways that I have done this, and I'm still working on this, is the empathy development of, we spent some time down on the streets of Seattle giving out hot chocolate blankets, socks, and sandwiches. And we've done this 5 times to the homeless. And I've let my son take the lead in doing this because I want him to develop another point of view and empathy. And with that empathy comes gratitude. Now, a sense of gratitude also fosters something else. It fosters optimism. Optimistic people have more hope about our future. One of the concerns that our generation and our kids are coming to us is they're saying that we feel hopeless about the future, so what's it matter? So we've got to help develop gratitude, empathy, and optimism.
But you know, when I take my son as well, and we do similar charitable givings, they seem to view the world as materialistic. Everything seems to be an exchange of an item, whether it's clothing or the, like you said, the blankets, the food. You know, there seems to be very little about actually giving or volunteering your own time and emotion. It seems to be time and materialism.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, we got to keep working on that, don't we?
Oh, yes,
absolutely.
We do.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to education. Statistics show that American students rank 24th among 34 countries in mathematics and science. We are behind China, Singapore, and South Korea. This, I find, is a total disgrace. We are meant to be the world's leading nation, but at this rate, we're going to be mediocre at best. Education seems to have lost its importance because we idolize successful people who've dropped out of school, like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, who make it look glamorous. But of course, these examples are few. And then we idolize celebrities who are famous just for being famous and not for their achievements. How do we reinforce the value of education into our youth?
I think here's one of the dilemmas that we're faced with. In our culture, we've got 92% of the boys who receive the D's and the F's. Most of the delinquencies and trips to the principal offices are done are boys. What we've got to do is look at our whole education system. And what we're seeing right now is some newer trends. It really began about 10 years ago, where we start to see some gender-specific education. We start to come to the realization that the boy brains and girl brains work and develop differently, and they learn differently. And we're seeing some great results in schools where gender-specific education is implemented. A real turnaround in boys being successful in schools. Most of our school settings have been designed pretty much for the female brain, for girls. And so, you know, sometimes we've got to look at what is this systemic problem that we have in the education system. And I've seen that we're seeing some good results when we change the education and how that's being delivered.
But, you know, we've got more concerns than just being gender specific. I mean, we are globally behind. We are global specific. I mean, 24 out of 34?
Absolutely.
In something as simple as mathematics and science, very basic, where every school in every part of the world teaches their students.
But remember, this is where boys are failing. And also right now, for the first time ever, we had more female graduates from college and university than males.
I agree. But we're still number 24 out of 34.
Yep.
Globally. So how, within the family, I mean, this system, this seems to be a problem at every level of society, whether it's family, government, community. How do we reinforce the value of education?
Well, I think what we also want to look at is we're making education rewarding. And, you know, one of the things that I think is so important is allowing the kids to develop their own interest in areas of education. So we do some things that are outside of the school system to keep education and learning fun. And I got to tell you, a lot of this too for me is school specific and school district and private versus public schools. I think there are more good options out there for us to really involve ourselves in our kids' education. For example, I have met with both of my son's teachers, not on just teacher conferences. I've set aside time to go and meet them, to continue to work with them, to make it a team. So we're working more on our personal level to make this a team effort.
You know, in Asia, I notice parents and the system as a whole focus a lot on academics. We in the West tend to focus on the whole development of the child.
Right.
But it seems to be costing us our position in the world. But because being number 24 out of 34, the child might know a little bit about everything.
Yes.
But it's costing us.
Absolutely. Good point indeed.
Give me some advice on emotional welfare. Kids have more to worry about than we did. Schools have become war zones. Cyberbullying is on the increase. The youth seem more depressed than our generation was at their age. Sexual practice, teenage pregnancy is on the increase. So is obesity. Our children also seem less enthusiastic. They have more, but they're unhappy. Mm. It seems difficult to excite them. I don't see happy kids anymore. What's going on?
Oh, absolutely. Well, one of the things, again, we're looking at is we've got to be ambassadors with our own kids of teaching them how to deal with what I'll call the three deadly emotions. Number one is anger, fear, and guilt. Those three emotions, anger, fear, and guilt. Here's the thing. If we don't teach a kid how to deal with frustrations and anger, another word for anger could be hurt. They don't have healthy role models teaching them how to deal with anger. Now, number two is fear, because anxieties are up in our culture and with our kids, and anxious kids going to school. We've got to be able to deal with that and talk to them about. Number three is guilt. Some kids already feel a sense of shame and failure. And so one of the things, I keep it that simple, is how am I modeling anger and resolution and forgiveness in my home? Kids absorb the primary emotions of the home. Are we teaching our kids to be fear-based? Are we teaching them to always be angry and frustrated? So we need to look at that. What's the tone of our homes?
But where is the fear and the guilt coming from?
Well, I think overall there could be fear that they're feeling if they live in a home where there's been anxiety and fears around perhaps it's finances. If we allow them to be too self-absorbed in the media and the news, you know, a kid's going to process some of this differently, and they can absorb a lot of fear. There's the fear of rejection that's great for our kids. The peer pressure, I think, is greater than ever before. So they develop a fear of, am I okay, and a fear of rejection. So, you know, none of us as parents had a class in school, for example, or in high school or college about how to be healthy emotionally. And sometimes we may need to get even some outside help of what does it really mean to model healthy emotions?
But, you know, when we were kids, we pretty much experienced the same emotions from the same sources. But I don't recall seeing us as being as depressed or as unhappy as the kids are of today.
Yes, I know. And I think if I would say in one word, that things are more intense. The intensity has increased. And we bring in, again, intensity from technology, the intensity from the media that over-sexualizes girls early on. So the intensity of the pressure, I do believe, is different.
Well, let's move on to technology since we're talking about it. You know, as adults, we frequently complain about our children spending too much time in front of a screen. I see it a little differently. We are digital immigrants. Our children are digital natives. They were born into this while we migrated into technology. I do find it odd, though, that they prefer to text rather than talk. They socialize via Facebook and Twitter. I think they're great at multitasking. But is this a bad thing in itself, or are we as adults just not able to relate to this different way of doing things?
Well, it's got some pros and some cons. If you only allow your kids to have primarily online relationships, which could take the form of texting or Facebook, and that's their primary mode of communicating, we've seen situations where kids aren't really prepared to be in healthy relationships because they haven't gone through the normal relationship stages of developing a relationship, of developing appropriate intimacy.
Maybe they never will. Maybe they never will.
You know, I can be perfect online, by the way. In fact, I look perfect online, right? I present myself online. And so the online presence and reality, obviously, many times are quite different. So many times our kids are structuring relationships not based upon reality.
But will there ever be a reality? Because technology is not going to stop. This is now the new reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is fundamentally why this morning I told my oldest son, now remember, the kids that you text with are the kids you're going to talk to in person today. Build that real relationship.
So are they, do you consider them addicted, or are they just simply enjoying the digital era?
There's a line that gets crossed where we become so obsessive with it. And if you have a kid that's sleeping with their phone, you know, and I say phone, it's really a portable computer, a smartphone. If you have a kid sleeping with that or an iPod or some kind of device, and the first thing in the morning they're up doing that, if they're doing that at the expense of relationships, of schoolwork, how about if you monitored just how much time was spent online for a week? I think most of us would be surprised, and it's a good assignment for an adult. What if we took a day a week and decide which day it is, but just try to do a little technology detox? Dry out a little bit from technology. What's the primary emotion that you feel? I feel irritable. I feel anxious. I feel disconnected. In a recent survey, 64% of Americans said after 1 hour of disconnection, they felt disconnection anxiety.
So what's the right standard? What's the right amount of time one should be spending?
I don't know that I have an answer to the right amount of time. I think it's age dependent, I think, as well as it's personality dependent. And what are going to be the rules in the household?
Well, Greg, do you think from all of this that we've discussed that we as parents really, it really comes back to us that we are to blame because we've really not passed on the fundamental values of hard work, respect, discipline, which we were taught from our parents?
We have a responsibility. And we also need to remember we are paddling upstream in our culture and the media influences, but we do have that responsibility.
Well, you're the founder of the Center, A Place for Hope. Tell us about it.
A Place of Hope, this is our 28th year. Wow. We are a whole person facility, meaning that we work from the vantage point of dealing with the whole person, emotionally, physically, spiritually, relationally, which means our team consists of specialists in all those. That's why we have a massage therapist, a fitness person, the dietitians. We look at your diet. We look at you come in and you're depressed. We're going to look at not only what's going on in your body chemistry, but we're going to look at the rest of your life. We really believe success means we deal with the whole person.
What are the reasons someone would come to you?
Number one thing, Vip, that we're seeing is depression. And the World Health Organization tells us by year 2020, that depression will be, they call it a disease, the number one disease in the world. And so depression is by far the greatest thing we see. Obviously, there's other kind of what we'll call co-occurring issues that maybe anxieties and addictions and alcohol and drugs. But the primary presenting issue is depression.
And what are the causes of it?
Well, depression can be – this is why it cannot ever be a singular approach. This is why we've got to obviously look at is their chemistries out of order? Is their diet? Is there a person that has been emotionally abused or has trauma that's unresolved in their life? Is there a person in their life that's in a relationship that has been abusive for a long time and they've been dealing with anxieties and stress and it's turned into – a depression that's really disabling. So depression, this is why we're not going to say, hey, go take that pill. It'll take care of your depression. No, we want to look at all the pieces to the puzzle.
And how long does it take for your average client who comes in suffering from depression, how long does it take for them to recover?
You know, a person may be with us for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, sometimes longer. Some of the eating disorders, and some of the folks that come in are here longer because of the issues that they're dealing with. But you know what? It's really dependent upon a person's individual needs.
And how can our listeners reach you?
You know, one of the things, and if you're concerned about a teenager or concerned about depression, please do take my free online survey that you can go to at aplaceofhope.com, aplaceofhope.com.
And you've written 26 books.
I've just finished number 27.
And which one's that?
Well, I'm just completed a book with a brain expert by the name of Michael Gurian, and we're doing a book on, or just completed it actually, on raising boys and what brain science has to say about it.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Greg.
Very good to be with you today. Some very good questions for us to look at.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is it for today. Thank you for listening. Feel free to send in your comments to our Facebook page at facebook.com/Fox News Radio or tweet us at Fox News Radio on Twitter. I'm your host, Vip Jaswal, and keep your ears open for the next airing of the Vip Jaswal Report, coming soon.